I'm also excited about the fact that the Melbourne International Film Festival kicks off next week. It is Australia's biggest and longest festival of cinema. But also these days, of course, it spreads itself across a bit of TV, a bit of virtual reality. And here to talk through the lineup in her last year in the job as artistic director is Michelle Kerry. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Jason, for the final time.
I know. How are you feeling? Are you? What does it feel like for you? How many years have you been there now?
I've been at MIFF actually for 10 years, and this will be my 8th year as director. And I'm really super excited. I'm sure it'll be very bittersweet at the end, and I'll be very sad, and there'll be lots of tears and hugs. But look, it's an incredible program, so I'm actually going into it very excited.
Well, you've become institutionalized after 10 years. I know how that feels. So it will be strange stepping off. Off that ledge and into new adventures, I suppose. How many films this year? I did mention it's the biggest, and that continues to be the case. How many films are in the festival?
We're saying it's 393, but that does include virtual reality works or experiences. We don't actually call those films. So if you want to be very inclusive, that's the figure. So it's edging up to 400.
Yeah, and a big focus amongst those films this year on Australian films. I want to mention a favourite of mine that has been doing the rounds, especially overseas, because it was made via Venice for a few months, but it's just arriving in Australia now, and it's called Strange Colours, a debut feature by Alina Ludkina, that's about a girl who comes to visit her estranged father, I suppose, in Lightning Ridge, who's a miner, and look after him. And it's a very, very beautiful atmospheric film. And I'll play a little clip from it right now. So there's some strong language ahead.
My fucked up father calls me, tells me he's dying. Here I am.
You're not just bouncing around the country like a tennis ball, eh?
Anyone in there?
Passing through, on the road to nowhere.
Do you want to come for a spin?
It's all luck, really. Some people have it. Some people don't.
It's an absolutely beautiful film, one of the best examples of directing that I've seen on screen from an Australian, regardless of the fact she's a debut filmmaker. I mean, this makes it even more extraordinary, but the best directed films I've seen in recent times. But it's part of a slew of films that you think are kind of joined, not necessarily thematically, but in terms of a behind the camera approach.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. I think there's this new generation, and we certainly this seems to be the year for it in our Australian section, of these young filmmakers coming through, making their debut features, and for very various reasons, making them outside the system, as it were, meaning not going for the traditional public funding model route, and sort of funding their films. Otherwise, you mentioned Strange Colours, which I agree is just a stunning film, completely different. If people are a little bit cynical about Australian films, which I don't think they should be, but they should really check out this one. It's very different.
Yeah, they should. And I'll just add, if people think this sounds like the sort of Australian film they've seen a million times, because even in that synopsis, I admit it sounds like a story we've seen a lot, but it's in the execution that makes it extraordinary, I think. But go on.
That's right. No, and I was going to say a lot of these films are linked in other ways. I sort of realise a lot of the filmmakers kind of work with each other. So, I mean, do we want to call it a new wave? I don't know if we can do that just yet. But there is this new generation coming through. I'd also mention in this context a world premiere we're screening called Acute Misfortune, which is a stunning, stunning film directed by Thomas Wright, who's best known as theatre director. He's co-founder of the Black Lung Theatre here in Melbourne. And it's based on the best-selling book by Eric Jensen, Acute Misfortune, which is a literary biography of the artist Adam Cullen. So this is quite an amazing film. Another one is called Under the Cover of Cloud, directed by Ted Wilson, also a feature debut, world premiere about a young writer who loses his job in Melbourne and decides to head back home to Tassie with the idea of writing the most beautiful literary piece of writing on Tasmanian upper order batsmen.
Yeah, I've heard about this as well, and I think we have an interview with the director coming up on the show, actually. But I find that at the indie end of cinema at the moment, the hybrid form is incredibly interesting and showcasing some really interesting talents. Yeah, New Wave is it's an interesting idea, isn't it, that perhaps we're seeing a new wave. I wonder if it's partly nourished by the web and the cinephilia that's kind of appeared on the web, and also along with the opportunities opened up by a very low-cost digital technology. Filmmaking technology.
That's right. I think Australian filmmakers are a bit more internationally minded these days. They're seeking other ways of making their films and inspiring their aesthetic. And Strange Colours, interesting, has an interesting aesthetic that I also see in a film by the Caribbean, a number of films by the Caribbean Film Collective.
I had not really come across their work much before. Now, explain to me who the Caribbean Film Collective are, because they've been travelling the films around the world, haven't they?
They have. They've been in existence since about 2007. They're probably more known in the art world, particularly international. I mean, it's quite incredible. You see them written up in like Efflux and Frieze and magazines like that. And they've been at the Tate Modern and the Pompidou, and you know, their works have screened all over the world. Not so much in film festivals, but I think they definitely need to be seen on the big screen. So they're a mob from Northern Territory. There's about 30 plus of them, and they just make these gorgeous sort of 30-minute films that I guess are telling their stories. So they're indigenous, grassroots indigenous-based media group is how they identify, and they see filmmaking as a form of self-organisation as well as social analysis of their day-to-day living conditions as well as their history. And so
They were formed very much in response, in a way, to the intervention. Is that right? Am I getting that right, or is that overstating it?
Don't know if that was the sort of the thing that sort of got them making films in the first place, but in general, I'd say, yeah, they see filmmaking as a form of survivance, and so they analyse their history, they analyse contemporary settler colonisation, and they tell stories that represent their lives. So we've got three of their short films, 30 minutes altogether in a package this year, and I just think they're so interesting, and aesthetically as well, I see parallels with things like Strange Colours, this sort of hybrid documentary reenactment. They also use improvisation, experimental techniques, 8mm iPhone. There's a lot of humour in there as well, and very renegade in spirit. So very exciting filmmaking.
And in the tradition, I suppose, of a lot of those filmmakers that came out of the 60s and, well, the 70s in particular in Australia, and filmmakers like Martha Unsara and so forth that went from the city into the desert and worked with local traditional communities in a very collaborative way. I mean, this is more from the communities themselves, but certainly it seems to be, even formally speaking, dealing with things like reenactments and so forth, very much in the spirit of those hybrid films made in the 70s as well. So it's great to see that that's still going strong. Tell me about the African film retrospective. Various films, I think you've got at least 9 of them. It looks like a great lineup, including the wonderful 1969 Egyptian film about tomb raiders called The Night of Counting the Years, which was...
The Real Tomb Raiders.
Wonderful film restored by Martin Scorsese and his mates in the high fashion world, bizarrely. I think it's got a Giorgio Armani logo at the end of it. But anyway, tell me about this wonderful collection of African films.
Oh, look, this is so exciting. I should mention this has been curated by our programmer, Thomas Caldwell. Sort of really the impetus was sort of bringing these films from different African countries that haven't been seen here probably at all, dare I say, to the big screen. And you mentioned The Night of Counting the Years from Egypt from 1969. I agree. I think it's one of the most stunning films I've seen in recent times. Very hypnotic, but not in a boring way.
No.
Just like completely.
Well, I mean, it's about Tomb Raiders, so it's also very exciting, but it's very, it's got this
tense,
slow, dreamlike quality to it, which is very eerie.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's very tense throughout. So that's one. And there's another film called Chronicle the Years of Embers from Algeria, which is almost 3 hours long, but apparently is quite incredible. And then there's some more recent films. Got Kuka and Tami from Ghana and Flame from Zimbabwe. A number of female directors are represented in this section. So I think that's going to be a really one to watch because I don't see these coming to a cinema near you, unfortunately, during the year.
No, unfortunately. I mean, looking back over your tenure, over these last 8 years at MIFF, what has been the thing you've been most proud of?
Oh, look, there've been so many things. I mean, I think from a personal, the nascent cinephile in me, it was such a dream to bring out the French-Danish actress Anna Karina, which was fairly early on. She's probably most well known for acting in the films of Godard in the 60s. She was married to him and, I've always found her such an amazing presence on screen. So we brought her out and did a retrospective. I was also really proud of a program I did called the Australian Post-Punk Mixtapes, which was short films kind of unearthed and put together in that sort of late 70s, early 80s period by just Australian filmmakers, just these, young punks making films, really incredible stuff. So I was always proud of that. And I guess more recently...
Yeah, is that sorry, I mean, do you, well, mm. as an artistic director, do you see yourself as something of a circuit breaker when it comes to the commercial distribution networks of films? Like, this is your opportunity to sort of break that circuit and bring to screens things that people can't otherwise see. I mean, is there a fervour behind that vocation for you, almost a religious fervour of bringing, breaking the mould of what people think is cinema?
Absolutely. I mean, that's such an impetus behind what we do. We could show sort of films by well-known directors, of course, but, what's the point? People can see those. And for me, it's so exciting to discover films. And also I think we have to explain sort of why these are important films and also make people think differently about film. Like something like Caribbean is quite rough in places, but, I find it just really exciting. Again, it's that sort of punk renegade spirit. So much film today is so polished. It goes through so many rounds of script editing and so on. And, I love seeing things a bit rough around the edges.
Do you think, speaking about rough around the edges, a good sort of artistic director position at a festival needs a bit of freedom? And I know that these days, your event sits within a broader landscape of official artistic events, big ticket sort of gallery shows and so forth. I'm sure you're needing to hobnob with mayors and other politicians and certainly the boards there. I mean, how key is it for you as an artistic director of an organisation like this, and how much did you need to learn to kind of just hold your ground in the face of various commercial pressures and say, this is where we're going with this festival because it's important, because it's the right thing to do artistically? Is it getting harder?
Oh, look, absolutely. And, I came through as a programmer, and to be thrown into that sort of minefield, sort of that tension between the need to, please certain stakeholders as well as sort of do the things I wanted to do. And I've always...
Stakeholders,
loved sort of
underground. I hate that word.
I've used that word, I know.
No, it's fine.
But you know what I mean? And look, I think I've just learned to navigate that and be very genuine. I mean, I think there's a place for that stuff as well, because they do fund films, and it comes back to this thing of just, putting it out there that film A is just as worthy as film B, even though they might have different budgets or different stars attached, and that, I see no distinction. So I don't want to also sideline film B, because there are people that want to see that. And, as MIFF, we see ourselves as a festival that's accessible to all audiences.
Yeah,
I don't want
to
just be playing 400 little punk films.
No, but you do a good, you do a very good job of selling those little punk films, and I congratulate you for it. You've been on the show every year and generously sort of given your time to talk about what's coming up in the festival. And this year does look great. And I thank you very much for your service to cinema in Melbourne over the last 8 years, and wish you all the best with your adventures in whatever you choose to do into the future. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Jason. See you at the festival.
Oh, well, yeah, see you indeed. Okay, that was artistic director, looking forward to going down. Artistic director of the Melbourne International Film Festival, Michelle Carey, and MIFF, of course, runs from the 2nd till the 19th of August.